Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the milk of human kindness is not pasteurized right after this. You know, Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history. Surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity from bank deposits to medical visits has produced greater efficiency and security, all right, but it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. Now, our federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American, and that according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. Closer to home, state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us, and a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that that state, New York, and its agencies operated 1,776 separate data systems containing some 10,799 categories of information about New York residents. And every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. All of this information about you is being gained from 63 sources. And this information is being gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how your government, your bank, your insurance company, business and industry is obtaining all of this information about you? And what are their sources? And how is it stored? And how is it retrieved? And what do they want it for anyway? Well, knowing how all of this information is being gathered and what information is being stored and what information you want to keep personal and private actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, if you'd like more information about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. While you're at it, ask for our free general law CD package. That's the place to start. And let me tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and just as private as you want to be. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. You can call and ask for one. It's 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. georgegordon.org, and then go to the archives page. And we're talking about pasteurized milk. The general consensus of opinion is that pasteurized milk is 100% safe. I showed you in the last program that's not true. That's a fiction. It is pretty safe. Your chances of going into the store, picking up a quart of milk, and walking out, drinking it, and falling over dead is pretty damn rare. Now, it's happened, and it's more common that it will happen with pasteurized milk than it will with raw milk, and that's my point. Your chances of dying from pasteurized milk are so remote as to be ridiculous, and your chances of dying from raw milk is less than pasteurized. And so the question arises, well, then why is there all of this opposition to raw milk? And the answer to that is raw milk costs a lot more to produce. And the dairymen and the dairy associations don't want to produce raw milk because it costs more. It's just that simple. It just has to do with dollars and cents. And as long as they can keep you and me drinking pasteurized milk, which is cheaper to produce, and has a longer shelf life. And that's the key to this whole thing. See, raw milk has a shelf life of about 5 days. Pasteurized milk has a shelf life of 2 weeks. And if it's ultra-pasteurized, it can be 4 months. And so just from a dollars and cents point of view, the dairy associations would rather sell us pasteurized milk. And they use the police power of the state to enforce their monopoly. That's what bugs me so much. It's the police power of the state. It would be easy to simply say, hey, let us buy what we want to buy. And if we did that, we wouldn't buy the pasteurized milk. That's what they're afraid of. Same thing is true with labeling packages with organisms. What do you call those now? Slips my mind. Genetically modified organisms. Now, several groups have been before Congress trying to get Congress to pass legislation to force the food industry to label their packages with these genetically modified organisms, GMOs. And they don't want to do that because they know there's people like me out here. If I saw a package that said, this package contains GMO, I wouldn't buy it. It's like walking in the store and I see a package that's marked pork and beans. If it's got pork in it, I don't buy it. See how simple that is? That's why they don't want to label that. So, bottom line is, money triumphs over health, or money triumphs over freedom of choice. Always has, does now, and will continue to do that in the future. Now, through this process that we talked about last time, chromotography, whatever the hell that is, we now know that synthetic vitamins are not the same as natural vitamins. So what they do is they make Wonder Bread, build strong bodies 12 ways, and they put this artificial vitamins in, chemically produced vitamins. And like we found in milk, milk is full of calcium, which is totally unavailable to your body without a particular enzyme in the milk. You don't have that enzyme in your body. So they're not lying to you. And Wonder Bread, God love them, they're not lying to you either. If, in fact, Wonder Bread had these vitamins in it, it would build strong bodies 12 ways. It doesn't, hasn't, isn't now, and never will. And that's because they put these synthetic vitamins in. So they can tell you this thing is just jam-packed with vitamins, and they're not lying to you. They're deceiving you. You think when you pick up this package, boy, this is really healthy stuff. It's full of vitamins and minerals. It is full of vitamins and minerals that are totally unusable in your body. And they know that. Don't kid yourself that the people that are running Wonder Bread don't know the difference between artificial and natural vitamins. Hell, those people make their living doing this, boys and girls. Lying to you and deceiving you is a part and parcel with their paycheck every week. And as long as you buy it, everybody's happy, aren't they? You're happy because you believe it, and they're happy because they're getting paid for it. Now, the pasteurizers love to point out the vitamin content of their heat-treated milk, using this as an argument for equivalent nutrient value between natural, raw, certified milk and heated, pasteurized milk. But vitamin C, for instance, is higher in concentration in fresh milk, fresh raw milk, than is heat-treated or pasteurized milk. In fact, it's 33% more. Now, the pasteurization fanatics quickly point out that both are inadequate in vitamin C, and neither raw nor pasteurized milk should be dependent as a vitamin C source. But boys and girls, if that's true, then why do babies who are fed pasteurized milk develop scurvy-like syndrome, and babies fed on raw milk do not? Now, Pottinger proved there is yet undiscovered deficiency diseases similar to vitamin C deficiency, called scurvy. I couldn't think of that the other day, scurvy, that can be cured by giving an endocrine product that contains no vitamin C. Raw milk has this unknown nutrient, and pasteurized milk does not. Stephenson, a famous Arctic explorer, demonstrated that a supposedly adequate intake of vitamin C in the form of tomato juice did not prevent scurvy in an Arctic sea captain. Whereas just a few days on, raw meat cured him completely. You ever think about that? Eskimos don't eat tomatoes. Eskimos get their vitamin C from the blubber of the walruses and the whales that they eat. As shown by Pottinger, raw milk, if it had been available, would have accomplished the same thing. Again, if an Eskimo had tomatoes available, it would accomplish the same thing. And while it's true that you don't have to get your vitamin C from milk, let me ask you this. Why shouldn't you get some of your vitamin C from milk? That's what you're paying for, isn't it? When you buy something and you take it home and it says that it's full of calcium, don't you believe that you should receive the benefits of the calcium that they're advertising in the milk? After all, that's what you're paying for. So when some guy comes along and says, well, you don't need that vitamin C, and well, so it's missing a couple of vitamins, and all right, so the enzymes are dead. Hell, isn't that what you're buying and paying for? I mean, if you're just buying it for taste, drink Coca-Cola. Coke tastes a hell of a lot better. It has absolutely no nutritional value, and it tastes real good. Try it. If God made anything better than Coca-Cola, he kept it for himself. But the fact that it doesn't have any nutritional value, it's full of sugar and causes all kinds of degenerative diseases. You know, some of us have decided, well, maybe we ought to give up on the Coke, but you might as well give up on the milk. I wouldn't waste my money buying pasteurized milk out of the store or buying meat out of the meat market. And the stuff isn't fit for human consumption. I'm not sure it's fit for my dog. I think I feed my dog better than most people get fed out of the supermarket. That's just my personal opinion. Now, it was pointed out in 1942 that the cows of the country produce as much vitamin C as does the entire citrus crop, but most of it's lost as a result of pasteurization. Today, the losses in commercial pasteurized milk are even greater. Jack Jensen, Ph.D., Clemson University, Department of Dairy Science, studied the vitamin losses in milk stored in translucent plastic jugs and exposed to continuous fluorescent lighting. This merchandising practice is standard today in most supermarkets. And Jensen found that at least half the vitamin C content of the milk was destroyed after 24 hours of light exposure to fluorescent lights. An interesting additional finding of the Jensen study was that the fluorescent lighting caused a light-induced oxidized flavor. Taste tests of Clemson students revealed that they preferred the oxidized taste and accepted it as the real taste of milk. The work of Friedberger is intensely interesting in this regard. Friedberger found that heat treatment actually caused deficiencies not caused by vitamin destruction. The vitamins were certainly destroyed, but animals on the heat-processed product with vitamins added still reacted adversely, just like those not receiving any additional vitamins at all. See, the vitamins that they're putting into your food, it says vitamin-enriched bread, vitamin-enriched this and that and something else. What they do is they go over here to OrthoGrow or Standard Oil, and they manufacture these vitamins out of chemicals. So, you know, they take a look at the chemical content of vitamin C, and they say, aha, well, we think we can make that over here in the laboratory, and sure enough, they can. They can make the exact duplicate chemical copy. One of them is alive, and the other one's dead. One of them has the enzymes, and the other one doesn't. So when you're eating natural vitamins, vitamins that are produced from tomatoes or pears or peaches or something else, it's got enzymes in it. Well, of course, until you heat it up past 132 degrees and you kill them all. So the question of do synthetic vitamins and natural vitamins have the exact same chemical composition? The answer is absolutely. Can you tell the difference? Absolutely. Which one is better for you? The natural vitamins, because they have the enzyme. Now, we're not quite sure what enzymes do. We can see them. You know, you can see them, hear them, taste them, touch them, feel them, and smell them. But that doesn't know that we really know what the hell they are. It's kind of like gravity, you know. You can see it, hear it, taste it, touch it, feel it, and smell it. But when somebody is asked, all right, now explain to us what it is, they don't know. If you think you do, send me a letter. Explain it to me. Explain it. So there's a lot of things out here that we can observe and see. We don't know exactly what they're there for or why. And we can observe a resultant difference. You can take a calf out here, put him on his mama, and the mama raises the calf. And take one off the mama and raise it on a bucket. Hell, you're feeding him milk. Maybe even a little better than that. Maybe you're even giving him Purina calf chow. And all kinds of other good stuff. Now, just watch those calves 4 months later. Weigh them. One of them will weigh 25% more. One of them will be healthier than the bucket-fed one. If that's the way it is. Now, that's the way we raise our calves because that's a cheaper way to raise them. I quit doing that. Hell, I put my calves out here on the cows and leave them there. It costs more, but then you get a better product. Now, the other side of the coin is, I mentioned this to you a program or two back, and I go a step further with the milk production here. I leave the calves on the cows. So the calf takes all the milk he wants, and then I take what's left over. And that milk is superior, and here's why. Remember that calf? He's out there. He's sucking on his mama's tit. And when he's out there sucking, his saliva interacts with the enzymes in that cow's or on that cow's tit, which sends her a signal. She goes out and she eats the plants that have the vitamins and minerals that that calf needs. She's always got her milk in balance. And I'm always drinking the milk that's balanced with all of the 106 nutrients that that cow has to offer, plus the 14 that we don't know what the hell they're for. Remember that? And that's because in a commercial operation, the cow goes out and she eats. She eats what she wants, what she needs. She doesn't eat to put vitamins and minerals into her milk. She only does that when she's got a calf sucking on her. So that's why I like to leave my cows with the calves sucking on them, which sends a signal to the cow, hey, go out there and change your diet because you don't have enough copper, you don't have enough iron, you don't have enough vitamin C in your milk for this calf. So she goes out and eats the right stuff, comes back, and I get the balanced milk. Now, how do you like that for a plant? Now, here's what pasteurized, homogenized milk can do to you. In Chapter 11, we're going to report on how raw milk and immunized raw milk often can give great benefit to the sufferer of rheumatoid arthritis and other diseases. You also need to know what the wrong kind of milk can do to you. The right kind of milk can do for you, and the wrong kind of milk will do to you. It's chilling to read the findings from the Korean War, and it vividly illustrated the degeneration of Americans and American youth. Of the young men killed over in Korea, the autopsy examination revealed that 12% had a 50% blockage of their arteries of the heart. 5% of them had a blockage of 90%. Now remember, these were young men in their teens and 20s. Now do you think we've got a problem? Why were these young men and their arteries plugged up? The answer is pasteurized milk. Now we're in the third generation of degeneration like Dr. Pottinger's experimental cats. Skim or low-fat milk may cause degenerative arthritis, also called hypertrophic or calcific arthritis. Calcification of other tissues, such as the pineal gland, arteries, and kidneys, may also be caused by drinking fractionated skim or non-fat milk. It screws up your kidneys is what it does. Now, just for your information, if your kidneys are screwed up, well, Dr. Schultz out in California has a kidney detoxification plan. He's not the only guy that's got it. But, you know, look, if your bowels are plugged up, your liver is screwed up, your kidneys are plugged up, don't lose heart, you know. I mean, the medical doctor says, oh, your kidneys are shot. What you need to do is get a kidney transplant. Don't you think you'd be better off if you could clean your kidneys out? So about, there's four of these. You need a bowel cleanse, kidney cleanse, and colon cleanse, colon, well, that's bowel, colon, kidney and liver cleanse. And you know how to do this, you know, about once a year. So if you do one, you know, and then 4 months later you do another one 4 months later, especially when you get to be old, you know, you can keep your organs cleaned out and functioning, you know, not like when you were 15 or 20, but, you know, they're functioning like they did when you were 50 or 60. Which, you know, for a lot of you people, you know, would be pretty damn important. So tuck that one away in your heart. Now, there's a little gland right dead center in your skull called your pineal gland. And we were taught in medical school that the pineal gland was unimportant because it had no function. One of those little mistakes of evolution. Ancient philosophers thought the pineal was the site of the soul. Now, this little gland is often calcified even in young people, but as it had no function, nobody really cared about it, whether it was calcified or not. Now we know that the pineal gland is extremely important in light of physiology and hormonal regulation, especially in women. Now, calcification of the arteries, called arterial sclerosis, the joint's degenerative arthritis, and this important gland may be due to the excessive intake of fractionated milk, for example, skim or low-fat milk. On the advice of physicians, millions of people have switched to low-fat milk under the mistaken belief that avoiding the milk fat will enable them to avoid hardening of the arteries. Drinking this fractionated milk may cause exactly the opposite effect. Now, many other millions of people are drinking low-fat milk to avoid weight gain. This practice, combining a low-carbohydrate diet and skim milk, is used by most of the popular weight reduction clinics around the country. The Wolfson calcium dystrophy syndrome may sound a long way away from your local fat farm, but it's closer than you think. Wolfson did her classic experiments in the 30s. Her results have tremendous clinical significance in human nutrition. But like Crew's work with milk therapy, they have been largely ignored. Now, Wolfson reported that guinea pigs fed fresh raw milk thrived and at autopsy showed no abnormalities of any kind. The test animals fed pasteurized milk did not grow well, and they consistently developed a high characteristic syndrome, the first sign of which was wrist stiffness, a form of arthritis, but far worse was the effects from pasteurized skim milk. These animals not only did not do well, they became weak and emaciated, and then they died. First, they developed the characteristic wrist stiffness and then muscular dystrophy. Autopsy revealed several hardening of the arteries and calcification of other soft tissue. In humans, this syndrome is probably manifested by calcification of the joints, which we know as degenerative arthritis, hardening of the arteries, cataracts, and calcification of that important gland, the pineal. Wolfson postulated that there was an anti-stiffness factor in the cream portion of the milk, and she later proved that this factor is called a steroid, a cortisone-like chemical. If the animals were fed raw cream or a carbohydrate, the wrist stiffness would be reversed. Lack of carbohydrate will increase the symptoms. This may be highly significant in our diet-conscious and forever-reducing population. The anti-stiffness factor is probably not the only substance in the cream that remains undiscovered. Let me pause here and make an observation. Women here in the United States, as soon as they have a baby, they want to put this baby on milk. Well, every female's milk is different. Possum milk is different from coon milk. Cow's milk is different from sheep milk. Sheep milk is different from horse milk, and so on up the line. Now, when you feed the offspring of a particular kind of animal the milk from its mother, it thrives. But what if you don't have that milk available? Well, then a substitute milk has to be brought into play. Now, the animal will live. The animal will grow. It'll make it. You know, 9 times out of 10, it'll make it on this substitute milk. But it doesn't do as well. So just like calves and cows, humans, you know, and their babies do the same thing. We want to put our babies on this formula. And I had one out here the other day. I forgot the brand name of it. Now it's a, you know, they've got different brands, and I can't think of these brand names, you know, on this infant formula, but there's 3 or 4 of these popular brands. And the upshot of it is this. They make a big deal out of saying 12 essential vitamins and minerals. Oh, my God. Listen, boys and girls, there's 17 vitamins. And these have 12. And the boys and girls, I think there's around 64 minerals, 16 amino acids, umpteen enzymes. See, this formula doesn't have any of that. It's got 12. Better than nothing, but 12 is a long ways away from 106. There's 106 essential nutrients in breast milk, mothers. And when you give your kid, let's just write this down, 106, take away 12, that leaves us with 4 and then 1 from 9, and that's going to be 8. So you're cheating the baby out of 84 essential nutrients that you've got in your breast milk that you can't buy for love of money in any store from any of these formulas. So here again, I just want to point out to you, I'm not trying to get you to breastfeed your baby. I just want to tell you that when you give him the formula, you're cheating him out of 84. He's going to be sick and puny. And when you've got a baby that's sick and puny, that's not natural. That's not normal. And you're taking your kid to the pediatrician constantly, and the pediatrician shooting him up with snake venom and monkey pus, trying to make this kid happy and healthy. And you're fighting a losing battle to start with because the poor kid's starving to death. That's what his problem is. If you'd feed him, you know, he'd pull out of it by himself. But as long as you're starving him, he's always going to be sick, anemic, poor. Going on, there's this anti-stiffness factor. It's probably not the only substance in the cream that remains undiscovered. When animals are placed on skim milk with the vitamins lost from the cream replaced, the animals develop very poorly. But when 4% butterfat is fed to similar animals, they develop normally. The vegetable oils now being pushed on the American people by organized medicine and self-styled nutrition experts will not work as a substitute for cream. Skim milk-fed animals developed testicular atrophy with complete sterility. Male sterility is a major concern in our country today, and the skim milk fad may be a major contributing factor. The test animals also developed severe calcification of most large blood vessels, anemia, and high blood pressure. Another characteristic of the syndrome that may be of significance in human medicine is the development of calcium deposits around the bone openings in the spine that provide for the exit of nerves. Sciatica, S-C-I-A-T-I-C-A, and other nerve compression syndromes may be caused by this nutritional deficiency, and also a decrease in hearing leading to complete deafness was consistently found. So how much of Wolfson's findings in guinea pigs apply to man isn't known, but the implications are too ominous to ignore. People who drink skim or low-fat milk and millions have switched are usually calorie and weight-conscious people, so the skim milk they drink plus a low-carbohydrate diet may be contributing to the extensive calcific degeneration that we now see in so many patients. Now, critics say that just because we see this calcification in guinea pigs doesn't mean it happens to people. But who has offered any well-documented experimental proof of any other cause for the extensive calcific disease that we see today? Other dietary factors may contribute to this calcification, such as excess sugar, heated protein foods such as meat, chlorinated and fluoridated water, magnesium deficiency, thyroid deficiency, secondary to iodine deficiency, xanthine oxidase, smoking, cadmium poisoning, and so on. But the Wolfson experiments were conclusive and repeatable in somebody else's laboratory. Now, a Dutch chemist, William J. van Wagtendorck, at Oregon State College, confirmed the Wolfson findings. He wanted to find out if Wolfson was pulling everybody's legs, so he went and did the same study, worked out the same way. He found that guinea pigs with calcification of the tissues could be relieved with raw cream. Let me pause right there. What did I tell you about Doc Lester? He said, okay, Gordon, now your arteries are plugged up. So the solution is we got to unplug your arteries. How do we do that? So he put me on this chelation formula, and he said, now drink 1 cup of raw cow's cream every day for 90 days, then come back. Went back, took the electrocardiogram, and my arteries had improved by 30%. Now, I tested it. Worked for me. This Wolfson lady and this William J. Van Wagtendorck at Oregon State College tested it, and it worked for them. And what the hell more do we need? You remind me of the old story. There was a guy, flood came, and he climbs up on the roof of his house, and a guy comes by in a motorboat, and he says, hey, jump in the boat, and I'll save your life. Guy says, no, I'm waiting for Jesus. Jesus will save me. Pretty soon, the water's getting higher and higher. Another boat comes by. Guy says, hey, jump in the boat, and I'll save your life. Guy says, no, I'm waiting for Jesus. He'll save me. The water keeps getting deeper and deeper. Pretty soon, the guy's sitting on the roof pinnacle of his house. A helicopter flies over, drops a rope down, and says, grab onto the rope. We'll pull you to safety. Guy yells up, no, I'm waiting for Jesus. Jesus will save me. Helicopter flies off. Some time goes by. The water gets deeper, washes him off the house. He drowns. He ends up at the pearly gates. And he asks St. Peter, he says, what in the hell's going on here? And I was praying and waiting for Jesus. And then St. Peter said, well, we sent 2 boats and a helicopter. What the hell more did you want? And with that, let's take our break. You are listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there, georgegordon.org, archives page. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, they may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about pasteurized milk. The milk of human kindness is not pasteurized. Remember the author's name, William Campbell Douglas. If you'll look up his website, do a Google search and get a website, William Campbell Douglas, he's written a number of books. He's a medical doctor. I met him 20 years ago. He was pretty funny then. I think he's just as funny, or maybe funnier now. He writes books, very humorous way of putting things. And it's interesting, it's entertaining, and it's educational, and it's well documented. The guy isn't, slacked off by not citing from the authorities. And he uses reason, logic, and common sense, and then I think you'll enjoy. You'll probably appreciate that. Remember that name, William Campbell Douglas. Now, there's a second guy on here that's just a dynamite guy. His name is Robert S. Mendelson. He wrote the foreword here in Campbell's book. This book was written back in 1985. It's not out of date. It's just as up to the minute today as it was in 1985. He has updated the statistics in his new book. Somebody told me that the other day. I probably ought to get a copy of it. But, hey, listen, everything that was going on in 1889, 1907, 1929, 1945, nothing's changed. Raw milk's still better than pasteurized milk. Always has been, is now, and always will be. And if you want to participate in the benefits, well, then you're going to have to go out and find yourself a supplier. I mean, you know, you got a supplier for cocaine, heroin, marijuana, you're going to have to find a raw milk supplier. The government's used the police power. They came in there, and it's illegal in most places for you to buy raw milk. So like the early days, the pasteurized guys, they had to go out undercover in the dark, pasteurize their milk, and sell it. And then, you know, if you want raw milk, you got to do the same thing today. So nothing's changed. You know, the government gets in on one side or the other, and then they want to make a monopoly of it. It's just a matter of money. So if you want to have a better product, then you're going to have to go out and pay more money for it, and then you're going to have to find a supplier to give it to you. Now, going on here, this Dutch chemist over here, the cream factor, the active factor is killed by pasteurization. Okay, well, we found out what that was. Remember a little earlier? There's an enzyme in that milk. That's what Doc Lester told me. He said there's an enzyme in the cream of cow's milk. It's killed when you heat it. He says, now, you go down there and you drink a cup of cow's cream every day, and it'll clean your arteries out. Work like a shot. And so here's simply a confirmation of what old Doc Lester told me back in 1984. He said, hey, let me show you how this works. Raw cow's cream will clear your arteries out. And if you drink pasteurized cow's cream, it'll plug your arteries up. That's exactly what we saw in the Bible when we saw, you shall not see the kid in his mother's milk. Tells you the same story. All right, with all of this evidence indicating the pasteurized milk, especially skim milk, will turn you into stone, wouldn't you think that nutritional leaders would be promoting raw milk? Wouldn't you think that the government or somebody ought to jump up and say, hey, wait a minute, we've got to make a change here? If you believe for a minute that Congress is going to save you, you've got your head up the wrong end here again, partner. Congress gets paid by the lobbyists, and the lobbyists that are putting up the money don't want raw milk in the marketplace. That's the bottom line to that. It'll be a cold day in hell when you ever see raw milk in the marketplace. Now, granted, most of the experiments have been done with experimental animals, but as the great French physiologist Dubose once said, from the point of view of scientific philosophy, the largest achievement of modern biochemistry has been the demonstration of the fundamental unity of the chemical processes associated with life. In other words, if it happens in guinea pigs, it probably will happen to you. Now, it is true there are some exceptions to that, and I've reported on that a time or two. If you take rats and you feed them this artificial sugar, it doesn't affect them adversely the same way that it does humans. Humans, when they consume it, like things like cyclamates, you can see the difference and you can measure it right away. The rats have a methodology or a modality whereby they can digest that crap. Humans can't. But, you know, when you feed guinea pigs and rats and arsenic, they die. And now, when you see a rat die from arsenic poisoning, are you going to suggest that, well, just because it killed that rat doesn't mean that it's going to kill me? Huh? I mean, come on. Have we taken total leave of our senses here? While it is true that there are some animals that aren't affected in quite the same way, it is a general rule that if that's what happened to the guinea pig, that's probably what's going to happen to you. So take cognizance of that. R.D. Briggs of the Pathology Department of Washington University School of Medicine, reading that the British had reported a higher incidence of heart attacks among persons with chronic peptic ulcers, they hypothesized that this increased incidence may be due to the treatment, specifically the ingestion of large quantities of milk. So Briggs and his associates undertook a statistical study of 10 medical centers in the United States and then 5 in Great Britain. And they compared the incidence of heart attacks in ulcer patients taking a sippy, pasteurized, homogenized milk and cream diet with those that didn't use milk. Their results were startling. They were unequivocal. In the United States, patients taking the sippy diet had a 3-fold higher incidence of heart attacks. In England, the heavy pasteurized homogenized milk drinkers had a 6-fold increase in heart attacks as compared to the non-milk users. That's pretty important because that's what happened to me. When I left the ranch in 1964, I was a milk drinker. So I moved to the city. Well, I kept on drinking milk. And in 20 years, between 1964 and 84, I had my first heart attack in 1984. And this old Doc Lester, you know, he's an old country doctor, and he looked at me and he says, God, you are sick. Just looked at me and he said, God, you're sick. I said, well, what the hell's the matter with me? I feel pretty good. And he said, well, one thing is that you've got advanced atherosclerosis. And I said, well, what in the hell do you know? You haven't even done tests yet. You haven't taken any blood. You haven't done electrocardiograms. I said, don't have to. I can see it. And I said, how? He said, right there in the lobes of your ears. Remember? I told you that a little earlier. Now take a look in the mirror. Have you got lines in the lobes of your ears? Because when they looked at the autopsy results out of Korean War veterans, I mean people killed in battle, a big percentage of them over there had 50% blockage in their arteries. Where in the hell do young men 18 to 26 years old get coronary blockage in their arteries? Where does that come from? Huh? It comes from pasteurized milk. Wake up, smell some coffee here. I just wanted to give you the report. That's why when people say, well, I've quit drinking milk altogether, well, God love you. You know, that's the biggest step in the right direction that you can take. Now, why should you deprive your body, though, of the benefits of a healthful, nutritious food like milk made by God, who said, I'm going to give you guys a land of milk and honey. This is pretty good stuff. It's just that Campbell Douglas came up and he said the milk of human kindness isn't pasteurized. God didn't give you pasteurized milk. In fact, he told you, don't drink boiled milk. The hell do you need? 2 boats and a helicopter? Come on. Now, even if the increased intake of milk is responsible for this higher incidence of myocardial infarction in ulcer patients, the identity of the specific constituent of milk that is important in this respect has not yet been established. Now, that was back in 1960, and this isn't something that, you know, just came up in the last 3 weeks. Been around here, you know, for 50 years. Now, we know from 1960, from the work of Pottinger, Woltzen, McCulley, Oster, and others, that the specific constituents are heated protein and xanthine oxidase. Natural milk, raw milk, contains no heated protein and no biologically available xanthine oxidase. Now, this thing called sudden infant death syndrome, SIDS, SIDS, also called crib death, has baffled scientists for years. An apparently healthy baby dies in its sleep without crying, without struggling. These infants are 6 months of age or younger, with the highest incidence at about 3 months. Almost every conceivable cause from vitamin C deficiency to suffocation from bedding has been hypothesized as the cause of this tragic form of death in apparently healthy infants. Barrett, back in 1954, suggested that inhalation of food while sleeping may be the cause. This could never be demonstrated at autopsy. You know, they cut these babies open, they look in their windpipes, and they're not plugged up. But Barrett and his co-workers at the University of Cambridge then went a little deeper into the inhaled food theory. It had already been proven that most infants feed on cow's milk have evidence in their blood that they're potentially allergic to cow milk protein. Infants often regurgitate various amounts of milk while asleep, so if a child has built up a strong sensitivity to cow milk, they reasoned, then why couldn't they experience a massive allergic reaction called an anaphylactic shock, so a small amount of milk inhaled into the lungs? Using guinea pigs, they set out to test this theory. Guinea pigs were sensitized to milk, then the animals were subjected to cow milk, dripped into the throat and down the windpipe. The effect, although dramatic and devastating, was not like the quiet slipping away of the child who dies in the night from SIDS without a whimper. The animals convulsed violently and then died, hardly a slipping away. So it's back to the drawing board. Why was the reaction different? Well, the blood antibodies were present in the animals. The reaction should have been the same as in the humans. Something was missing. But wait, a bright researcher said. The babies die in their sleep. No one has ever seen a baby die of the sudden infant death syndrome. They don't die in their mother's arms. They always die when no one is around while they're sleeping. So, okay, let's anesthetize the animals, they reasoned. This will simulate the sleep condition of infants who die of the crib death. The results were startling, and they were unequivocal. Very soon after introducing the milk into the larynx of an anesthetized guinea pig, the animal stopped breathing without any sign of struggle. Death was preceded by a short period of more rapid breathing, until with a final nose twitching, the animal died. Their conclusion: it has thus been demonstrated that sensitized animals, when unconscious, can be killed quickly, silently, and without a trace of struggle by the inhalation of whole milk. So in classic British understatement, they added, the fact that babies do become sensitized to cow milk protein and that inhalation of this material could conceivably be the cause of crib death in a young infant should be another inducement to breastfeed young babies where practicable, as breastfed babies rarely die of sudden infant death syndrome. We would suggest that babies should be breastfed whether practicable or not. Now, I'd like to throw out a little challenge here. If you know of any breastfed baby that died from SIDS, send me a letter, would you? It's kind of like autism. You know, I was doing a program here, a series of programs on autism, and I said, you know, if we really wanted to find out what causes autism, it would be fairly simple. It's been postulated that all of these vaccines are doing it, and that more than likely it is the thimerosal in the vaccines. So in Japan, they stopped vaccinating babies from age 2 months to 2 years. It isn't that they stopped vaccination, they just delayed it. And they found that SIDS, that is sudden infant death syndrome, declined by 50% in Japan during that 2-year period. And I said, well, I'll just bet you that if you would eliminate vaccinations altogether, you could probably eliminate the sudden infant death syndrome. Now, when it comes to milk, and what we see in this chapter here, and then there's more dynamite chapters like this throughout the book, I just thought I'd throw this one out. Medical science says, my God, we just can't figure out what's causing this crib death. Well, 40, 50, well, let's go back 100 years ago. We didn't hear anything like SIDS, autism. So whatever it is that we're doing today, we weren't doing 100 years ago, and that's vaccinations and pasteurized milk. We didn't have any problem in this country with homosexual. It is true, there's always been a few sodomites, but nothing like we've got here today. And the problem's getting worse. You're getting more and more of them, not fewer and fewer. Now, something's going on here, whether it's vaccinations or whether it's pasteurized milk or maybe it's something else. Something that's been done since 1900 has been going on here in this country until now, today. We have autism, crib death, and sodomy, gays. Now, Pottinger discovered that when you feed cats pasteurized milk or cooked meat, in 4 generations, they'll become sterile. We noticed here in this book here called The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized, you had the same problem. Made the same observation. It says, hey, sterility now in males is a pretty common problem. And the hardening of the arteries or the plugging up of the arteries is very common. Now, what have we been doing in the last 100 years that's different from what we've been doing in the past 300, 400, 500 years, you know, before these problems developed? Now, don't expect government or the medical practice over here to come to your rescue because, I mean, this is the way these guys make their living. You know, let's be intelligent people here, you know. Now, the breastfed babies don't die from SIDS. And unvaccinated babies don't get autism. Now, why don't we go around the world and start looking at some people, and let's see if we can find people that breastfeed whose babies die from sudden infant death syndrome, and disprove this theory. Let's you and I come up with a theory here, and let's see these guys disprove it. Or let's go down in the Amazon basin, you know, where they don't have any vaccination, find some Indian tribe out there and say, okay, now how many of your children have autism? And if you can find people, you know, that live their lives without autism, then we need to ask, well, let's see, now are you people getting vaccinated? Are you people drinking raw milk? Are you drinking pasteurized milk? What is different about this group of people? Now, years ago, they used to go over to, oh, African places like that, and they'd look at people and say, my God, these people have perfect teeth. They don't have any cavities. They'd look at people 80 years old, they had all their teeth, no cavities. Then they introduced them to Coca-Cola. God love them. You know, we introduced them to the Western diet, and hell, those people in Africa, their teeth rot out of their heads just like ours does over here. And we're all shaking our heads. We just don't know what causes all this tooth decay. I brush my teeth 3 times a day with Crest, and my teeth are rotting out. Well, horses don't brush their teeth at all, and their teeth don't rush out, don't rot out. But then, you know, horses aren't drinking Coca-Cola. You ever notice that? And I noticed that the incidence in this country, the incidence of diabetes, doubled over the past 20 years at the same time that the consumption of soda pop doubled. Well, let's try it again. Over the next 20 years, let's see if we can double the consumption of soda pop, and I'll bet you we can double the incidence of diabetes once again. It hasn't occurred to anybody yet that soda pop causes diabetes. Nobody has thunk that up yet. And if they have, I haven't read it. That's an original. You remember, you heard it first right here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. I may not be a doctor, but I ain't brain dead. Not yet. All right, we are reviewing the book here called The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized. You want to get a couple of books from Robert S. Mendelsohn. That's spelled M-E-N-D-E-L-S-O-H-N-M-D. Get those at any health food store. And this one here called The Milk of Human Kindness by William Campbell Douglas. Probably you'll find that one in a health food store also. If not, go to Campbell Douglas online. Meanwhile, I'm out of time again, so I've got to give you a final reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Hey, time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.